Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Insight when it comes to industry trends, specifically from a saving and investments point of view. We're joined now by Senior Policy Advisor at the Association for Savings and Investment South Africa, also known as ASISA, to help us get a better understanding of some of the themes we see in the collective investment schemes industry. To tell us more as to what this means, why it matters, and how you and I play an influence here, Sunet Mulder is going to give us some details. Sunet, welcome to the show. Such a pleasure to speak to you again.
Good evening. Thanks for having me on the show.
Fantastic. I guess first things first, Sunet, for some of us who just contribute to our pension funds, understand how the market works and also have an RA, help us contextualize how our efforts speak to the greater impact that is going to be discussed regarding the collective investments schemes industry. What's the correlation and why does this matter?
So I think the importance is, you know, a lot of people think unit trusts are just individual investors, but that is actually not the case. For a lot of pension funds and RAs, you are given the option to choose your investments. And very often those underlying investments are unit trusts. So your listeners, without even knowing it, might be participants in the unit trust industry.
Mm-hmm. And I think this is so important, right? Because so often we talk about these as an option for many South Africans. And it's an entryway for South Africans to actually start investing in the market. So my little 400 Rand contribution actually then, together with many other South Africans, gets pulled together to contribute to a 4 trillion Rand industry. This is huge.
That is correct. We're sitting just under the 4 trillion mark. So it's definitely a significant part of our economy.
100%. So let's maybe talk about some of the themes that we see, especially since the conclusion of the first quarter of 2025. There's been a lot going on from about a year ago. Elections in South Africa, macroeconomic shifts, elections as well in the US that have translated into, I guess, increased volatility from a political, geopolitical point of view.
Absolutely. And I think in the first quarter, we saw the culmination of a lot of these coming together. And that is why we were actually very pleasantly surprised that we had a positive inflow for the first quarter. Because very often in times of uncertainty, people are shy to invest. But we had positive inflows for the quarter, which is very positive.
And help us contextualize that. Positive inflows meaning from a volume point of view or consistency of investment?
It's from a new investor perspective. Ah. So there are two levels of flows that we measure. We look at dividends and income that's reinvested. So those are existing investors that has already seen the value of having this investment. And when those unit trusts pay dividends and interest, they opt to have it reinvested and make their investment bigger. And then you also have new investors or new money coming in. And that is a first-time investor or it's a man on the street that already has money within a unit trust but might decide to put, rather than the 400 Rand a month, put in an additional 400.
I think this is refreshing, Sunet, especially given the mammoth withdrawals we heard from the two-pot system just last year. And I understand the dynamics are different because largely people are exposed, who are exposed to a pension fund, deem it as, you know, savings that they have to comply with and are almost coerced or forced into making versus collective investment schemes like unit trusts, where this is a voluntary payment. So I'm keen to understand, you know, does this show us, I guess, a shift in our thinking as consumers or perhaps just how differently we view these particular investment products and tools?
Well, I think it's coming back to our initial chat is that a lot of those pension fund money was actually also withdrawn out of unit trusts. So unit trusts are definitely not exempt from the two-pot. We saw flows out of unit trusts last year to cover some of those withdrawals. So it's definitely not exempt from it. But I do think it's positive that with that as background, we still had inflows for the quarter.
Got you. Maybe let's keep with investor trends, just in terms of the portfolios that we want to get exposure to, because that also plays a significant influence in performance.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important that investors get the right advice from their financial advisor to make sure that they invest in the type of portfolios that will be the right avenue for them to eventually get to their goals, whatever that might be. So we've seen in the last year that the bulk of the money has gone into your interest-bearing funds and close behind the multi-asset funds, where investors have a little bit more diversification across asset classes.
Mm-hmm. Does that also have to do with the level of investor education, though, in terms of the asset classes that we've been plowing our capital into?
Yeah, I think for your average investor, it's, you know, you investing into a fund and you do not always understand what are the different asset classes and what are the different risk profiles that go with those asset classes. In a multi-asset fund, you have diversification. So you can have equity exposure, which sometimes can be a little bit more volatile. You have potentially some offshore exposure and some interest-bearing exposure, and potentially also some money market, which is more your stabilizing, less risky asset. So within those multi-asset funds, investors get exposure to a range of investments.
Got you. Okay. Makes sense. And I was actually presuming that that's because perhaps as investors, we are becoming a lot more educated. But as you say, you're clubbing into a fund and there's investment professionals who then decide where this goes. Does the performance of these particular funds play an influence as well in terms of the valuation we see of the collective investment schemes?
Yes, we've had very strong equity performance specifically over the last quarter and the last year. And a lot of the growth in our this asset pool has come from that positive performance. I think the important thing is if you look at the average performance of the funds, and we are looking at a net performance, which means it's after fees, on a net basis, the average funds all seem to have been outperforming CPI, which we see as the baseline. We want our investors to at least have CPI, but most of the categories have outperformed CPI significantly over the 1, 5, 10, and even 20-year basis.
That's what we call alpha, right? Would that be correct, Sunet?
Exactly.
Definitely, which is what investors want when you actually are able to beat inflation into essentially in terms of the returns that you have, because it means that your money is growing faster than, I guess, having put it under a mattress and inflation and the time value of money getting to it.
Exactly.
Oh, fantastic. See, that means I'm learning a lot from the conversations we've been having over the last few years, Sunet. What about the offshore focus? And I ask this because I guess many of us might be worried or concerned as to how the noise and volatility around Trump, the tariffs, the trade war and everything else has played an influence on our exposure.
So there's two avenues for our investors. They can either invest in rand-denominated funds. Those funds then go and buy offshore assets. Or you sometimes have offshore companies that come into our market. They are approved by the FSC to market their funds into our market. That's called the Foreign Collective Investment Schemes. And if you invest in those, you are actually investing in foreign currency, and you use your allowance to make those investments. So those are the two avenues for investors to get offshore exposure. Mm. On the foreign collectives, we've seen the assets under management sitting just below 1 trillion. They're sitting on 974 billion. Mm. So also quite a strong group of investment on that side.
Got you. Sunet, I can imagine when, I guess, explaining this to many South Africans, myself included, we really are where the money comes from and streams from. The financial discipline, the conversations we have with our financial advisors to try and grow our wealth over a period of, you know, 10, 20, 40 years by exposure to these products, then filters through to this booming industry that we are getting to witness. And I'd like us to use this opportunity perhaps just to underscore how this highlights just the growth, the evolution, and maybe even the maturity of the financial services, or rather collective investment schemes environment in South Africa. Because in comparison to our peers across the continent, we've got a number of products to invest in, but also some South Africans do have the discipline that they've exercised to ensure that there's some level of investment that they participate in.
Absolutely. But I think our work is definitely not done. Mm. It's important for people to invest, to make sure that they are able to look after themselves and their families into retirement, potentially pay their child's school fees or university fees. And these vehicles are definitely there for those purposes. Long-term investment will pay off.
100% long-term investment. And we're talking years here, trying to keep up with the goals that we have over the long term. Sunet, such a pleasure speaking to you as always, ma'am. Truly appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Sunet Mulder, Senior Policy Advisor at the Association for Savings and Investment South Africa, an organization also known as ASISA.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.